Hey, hope you're enjoying the Grave Talks. Each and every week, we're now giving you two brand new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Today and every Wednesday, we're going to flash back to some of our favorite interviews of the past. To listen to our complete archive of episodes, along with commercial-free advanced episodes of the show months before they're released to the public, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. It's only $5. You sign up now at patreon.com/thegravetalks or follow the links at thegravetalks.com. Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted Hales Bar Dam. If you ever find yourself along the riverbanks of Marion County, Tennessee, you're likely to see the structure we're focusing on today, the haunted Hales Bar Dam. It's a giant concrete and limestone structure that once housed the controls to a massive hydroelectric dam at the turn of the century. Once a beacon for employment in the area, the haunted Hales Bar Dam attracted thousands to the area to live and work within its walls. Many would find a happy life in the area. Others would be swallowed up by its walls, literally. As is the story with many concrete structures of the time, not everyone who builds the infrastructure would survive to see it. In fact, some would become part of it. That's right, some of the construction and mason workers who helped create the Hales Bar Dam are literally stuck within the concrete walls, never to be seen or heard from again in the living form. The Tennessee Valley Authority spent nearly two decades trying to fix a leakage problem that has plagued the Bar Dam since its opening. Finally, in 1968, they called it quits and closed the dam, opening up the waterway and creating a new structure downriver. All that remains of the original dam is the massive control house on the shore of the river. Today, the area is home to tourists, fishermen, campers, and the spirits of those who haunt the Hales Bar Dam. Some say the ghost of a murdered woman roams the halls trying to tell her long-forgotten story. Others claim that a demonic entity walks the tunnel system of the dam. Full-bodied apparitions have also appeared to ghost hunters and tourists in the area, many suspecting those buried in its walls have never left.
Yeah, actually, it was the first multi-purpose hydroelectric plant that was built. It was started in 1905, finished in 1913. And then in 1939, Tennessee Valley Authority took it over and done, you know, a couple of changes and done some add-ons to the building. And then in 1968, because they continuously had problems with leakage, you know, it sat on top of porous limestone anyway. So it was, you know, shift and settle, but they had problems with leakage from, you know, the beginning. Then 1968, you know, TVA decided, well, you know, it's just too much work to try to save this. So they blew the spillway down all the way across the river. And the only part that's left is the old powerhouse. We got the powerhouse, we have a tunnel system, and then we have building two. And that building was added on in the 60s. So they moved everything, you know, further downstream to Nickajack Dam.
When the dam opened up and when it was under construction, what was life like for folks around that time in that area of the country?
Okay, well, actually, when they started it, they ended up with a town actually being, you know, formed because of the work. I think there was up to 5,000 people, men working around the clock to build the dam. It's all hand-poured concrete. So actually, you can go on the building and look, and you can see each board that was used to form it, and then they poured the, you know, the concrete. It had a steam plant on the dam side. On the other side of the river is the old lock for the ships and boats, and it's still there. That's the only part on that side of the river that's still there. Excuse me. They had a school, and like I said, they had a hotel. It was a big, it made a community. You know, in the beginning, it was, you know, just farmlands. It was actually, it was old Native American land that was lost in the Treaty of Sycamore Shoals with Chief Dragon Canoe. But the community grew and grew. Now, you know, the marina sits on the property now. You know, when they blew the dam in 68, part of the farmlands got flooded. There were some cemeteries that got flooded. You know, like I said, you know, it's a marina. It's got the campground. They even took some of the old foundations and used and built on top of for cabins that they rent out at the marina.
When they were building a structure like this, and it's always a very interesting thing to look at these buildings and think how they constructed them with the equipment that they had at the turn of the century. It really is, it's quite amazing. But the thing is, these buildings were not built without loss of life, without serious injury to many people involved in the construction process. A lot of that was almost just assumed to be part of the territory. When you do something like this, when you create something like this, it would be pretty amazing if everyone involved survived. What was that like? What is the story of that with the Hales Bar Dam?
Right, there was during operation one time. I mean, there were a few deaths during, you know, construction. Actually, you know, there's the rumor, and it's been passed on from people that there's, you know, some bodies in the wall, you know, in the concrete. But there also was like a race riot, and there were some black gentlemen that were, you know, killed there and actually lynched. And so, you know, a lot of major operations of pouring concrete, you know, have that story, like Cougar Dam. You know, there's bodies in the dam, because when they pour the concrete, if you fall in or get pushed in, it's like quicksand. There's nothing you can do to get them out. You know, I mean, it's just, they sink. They're going into that concrete, and more concrete coming right on top of them. You know, it's just an operation that you just can't stop immediately, you know.
Upon the eventual closure of the dam, what happened with the structure? Obviously, it's still there today, but what was it like when it shut down? What happened with the entire facility?
Right, it sat there. It was just an empty, vacant building. They used a TVA come, and they put a fence around it, you know, a chain link fence. It was vacant for a little while, and then the RV part, you know, the campground, got started. Fishermen and people from the campground, you know, just being curious, coming around. This is how the haunting stories really blew up. They would hear voices in there, see lights in there, hear screams. But actually, the building was haunted from day one of operation. Workers said that, you know, during the day, you could almost set your watch by it, that they would hear people talking around them and then start seeing figures walk around during operation. And see, a bunch of that goes back to, you know, you got to think about the Native Americans, Revolutionary War, Civil War. You know, they were slaves. So, you know, there's a whole gamut of things that can contribute to it.
Can you expand on that a little bit more? Tell me more about what was it like there before the actual facility and the dam was constructed, as far as who was on the land and what was going on there?
Well, like, you know, like I said, first it started out, Chief Dragon Canoe, the Cherokee, had the land. They had set up, you know, encampments all through the Tennessee River, actually. They were given the name the Chickamaugans. So that, you know, was eventually taken away from them. Like I said, the Treaty of Sycamore Shoals. You had, you know, the Revolutionary War. You know, it's probably encampments, you know, around the area. Civil War, they used the river, you know, for navigation, moving supplies. So it's all right there together. Day-to-day life across the river, on this side of the river, you know, you had plantations with slavery. It was very busy waterway. You know, it was the main source of navigation to move supplies from here. Yeah.
How did the idea come about after its closure to put something else there, to have some other things surrounding this dam and this area that once was brimming with life, but then had fallen into basically its end of times?
Okay. Well, like I said, the RV park and campground started. And then, you know, the marina got started, part of the land purchased for the marina. TVA gave control of the building to the marina, you know, to use as boat storage, you know, storage facility, whatever they needed, because it was right on property. So people that worked at the marina were put boats in for storage, and you know, probably just get curious and wander around the building. Things were happening. So they started, you know, when, you know, the rumor got out, you know, this place is haunted. So paranormal groups would come, try to, you know, say, hey, can we come in and check it out? And they started letting them, then it's just word of mouth. You know, hey, this place is haunted. Then a couple of the TV shows come, got involved in their show, and it blew up. And it's just, and then all of a sudden, you know, the hype died down, because sometimes it gets shut down or it was completely booked or they weren't, you know, doing tours or anything paranormal-wise. And then it got picked up, you know, a couple years ago. And we come, I've been in paranormal since 97. And I was, you know, knew about the building, heard the rumors, so I went in. Just made a phone call one day about 3 years ago, and they let us come and investigate. And then we started helping with doing ghost tours. And then a year ago, we were left with it. You know, the guy that was running it, he had to go back home to Memphis. So we talked and we got it, and pretty much have been working to try to get it back up on the paranormal radar, which is, you know, it's there now.
Paint a picture for us of what the structure looks like and feels like when you're in it or near it.
Okay, it's empty. The only thing in there is a couple of boats and a couple of boat trailers, you know, that they, you know, the marina uses for storage still. All the electrical, all the switches, gauges, all the wiring, all of that has been pulled out of the building. All the furnishings, doors, you know, there's just like one or two doors left, or, you know, maybe three or four, but it's gone. It's just an empty, vacant building. It's three floors on the main powerhouse. You have the underground tunnel, and then you have building two, which is, you know, it's got three floors in it, but the main floor of it was the old air conditioning system. So, you know, it is pretty much vacant. The main powerhouse, 86,110 square foot by itself.
When you first got involved with the building, with investigating it and experiencing it for yourself, beyond just the rumors, beyond just the stories that you had heard for years, what was it like? What were some of your first experiences personally with the building?
Oh, it was the first time I went in the building, it was like, wow, yeah, you're going to get lost in here. I mean, it's a massive structure. But yeah, when I first started going in, I was like, yeah, I was amazed at how much rooms, you know, but just, I mean, it's like a maze in some parts of it. So yeah, it's a very impressive building. Now, after being there so long, and a lot of people, you know, that has been there, you know, and that know me, you know, I'll navigate through the whole building without a light. Sometimes without a flashlight, I've just learned the building so much. But yeah, you have to have a light going through the tunnel system day or night. Well, the first night we were there, right off the bat, we're on the second floor. We're in the hallway, and there's adjoining rooms to it. But right in the middle of the hallway, there were five of us that heard it, a giggle. like a kid or young girl giggling. And it was right there in the middle of us. And nobody's there, you know. And we're all like, did you hear that? And I was like, yeah, that's a full-blown laugh. That was the first thing that happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, been in there more and start paying attention and investigating more. The EVPs, and then you can actually, you know, when you see figures moving, shadow figures, full-bodied apparitions, then you're like, okay, yeah.
What is the feeling in the building when you come across something that you know shouldn't be there? Whether it be good, whether it be bad, but just shouldn't by normal standards, so to speak, should not be occurring. What's going through your mind?
Startling. I mean, you turn a corner and there stands somebody, you know, you catches you off guard, whoa. And then when you look back again and they're gone, you're like, okay. I mean, like I said, I've been in it since 97. So I've seen a lot at different places. You know, no matter how many times you see an apparition, spirit, or, you know, shadow figure, you still get startled. It catches you off guard.
Sure.
But as far as being scared, no. I mean, there's one room in the whole facility that I don't go into. Yeah, it's negative. It's an old bathroom on the second floor. But whatever is in there, it's not good. It's nasty. And I just don't get into a space. I made the mistake one day of going in there, standing my ground against him, and he reached out and grabbed my arm forcibly. And I was like, sure, this is your spot. Don't worry. I won't be back. And there have been a couple of EVPs that have come out of there that are just horrendous. The voice comes across, and what it's saying is just, it's, you know, it's not good. Whatever's in there is not good. The voice is just the creepiest. Okay, the same voice has been picked up in two different areas, one in the tunnel and then up here. But the one on the second, it's saying, come to me. But the way it's saying the voice, it's very sinister, very creepy. And the tunnel system, we've got it where it's the same voice, everything. Come on, tunnel, the devil's in the room. It's pissed me off.
Tell me more about the entity, the dark entity that is there. Is it something that you suspect was a not good person that still lingers? Or do you think it's something much darker and sinister than that?
I don't think it's ever walked the earth in human form, no. I don't. Well, what's up there is not, no, it's not human. I do not believe it to be at all. You know, and we do have a couple of negative entities. I call them spirits because don't really know for sure if it's, you know, if they were human or not. The one in the tunnel, it's probably demonic. And the one on the second floor, I'd probably say is a low-level demon, my opinion. You know, it's been the opinion of several other people, too. So during the time of the building that, you know, it was fenced in and stuff, and nobody, you know, was allowed in there, there's no telling who broke in and what they done. You know, this thing could have been conjured up. It could have been dropped off just by people coming through, you know, something that was attached to them. I don't know, because I do not know exactly everything that has went on in the building with it being, you know, prior to us taking over. See, that's one of the major problems with any kind of location, haunted location. When people, you know, everybody that, you know, we talk to other people that have locations too. And, you know, we all have the same problem. People breaking in, thrill seekers. They'll break in when they know, you know, we're not around, we're shut down or whatever. But you don't know what they're doing. You know, they don't know if they're going in there, they have, you know, summoning crap, or if they're playing with the Ouija board and not shutting the door. Who knows? And it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword of having a location like that. because if things are going on that have been left or summoned or this, that, and the other, they may think it's fun and games. But the problem is, we have to go back. You know, owners or managers or dealing with everybody's mess.
Beyond the dark entity that is there in that building, who else resides there? Do you have any names? Do you have any stories or ideas on who might else be haunting that same place?
Yeah, we've gotten the name Hank, Henry, Seth, Paul. We do have a Linda. She was murdered there, actually. That was, you know, we don't have a specific date. That has always been said, you know, there was a girl that was killed there, was murdered there. But through work and, you know, investigation, you know, we have come up with her name on EVP recordings several times, and she has said, you know, things, you know, about being murdered. So that is one of the strongest spirits.
What do you know about her story that she's trying to share with you?
Yeah, she was young. She got pregnant. I worked that was married to somebody else. And to, you know, I don't know, you know, point to, but, you know, something happened and he killed her. You know, I don't know, I guess to cover up the pregnancy. Back in that time, we've learned that a lot of deaths were covered up. Just, you know, it was nothing. Like even back to the beginning, you know, when it was in construction of the place. A human life didn't mean nothing. I mean, a human could be easily replaced, but they had to spend money to buy a mule. So, right, you know, I mean, they valued their mules more than they did the humans, you know, so. But a lot of it was like, you know, nothing. It didn't, you know, I guess then it wasn't news. It was just something, okay, it happened, so what? But there is, you know, some documented of a drowning, electrocution, you know, things like that that happened. Several times, there's a gentleman with overalls, like denim overalls with a white shirt. He's been seen several times. And we figure, you know, it's just a worker that, you know, he loved the place, loved his job, probably come back after death. But there's been other figures that you can't tell nothing, you know, about them. It's just a shadow figure. You know, we see that a lot. Sometimes you can, a lot of noises of working. And I figure, you know, those type of noises are probably residual. You know, it's just something that's playing over from construction and everything.
How much of the haunting experience that goes on there is a residual type energy, and how much would you say is more of a conscious energy?
I'd probably go 50-50 on that, you know, because of experience with it. You know, now we do have a lot of bangs going on, things getting slammed. That part is usually when we're carrying on a conversation about, you know, some things that's going on. And it's kind of like the spirits are then trying to get our attention. You know, then, like, if you're just going in normal and just hearing machinery and, you know, people working on things, that's a residual. Seeing some of the figures walk around in the main area where the generators were at, I would consider that would be residual type. Now, we've had on one instance, we did have a shadow figure that run down some steps, got by a railing, and it stopped and looked at us for probably 20 seconds before it took off in another area. So I figured that was probably intelligent. But as far as our EVPs go, they're all pretty much intelligent replies.
Tell me more about the EVPs that you've captured there. What are you hearing on them?
Right. Well, the ones I said, you know, about the negatives, they're pretty much, you know, with that kind of, we get to get out a lot. And we do have one area that's a mechanics area. And a lot of times he'll just say, you know, let me be or leave me alone. or you can ask him, are you the mechanic? And you'll get a reply, yes. But we haven't been able to get his name. He really don't want to be bothered. But if you, on the other side of the wall, where the tunnel system is, we have a table set up right outside the mechanics room. A lot of times we can be sitting there, just sitting, and you'll hear him in there like he's working on stuff. We've even heard him talking to somebody else, a conversation going on. The rest of the EVPs, you can ask questions, you'll get replies, intelligent replies. I'm trying to think some of the other ones that's pretty... Now, with Linda, we got her name. Took a little while, we got her name, and she actually said Linda. And then the female voice we get on EVP recordings, you can tell Linda's voice from the other. It's got the same, sound, everything.
Do you think she's trying to relay a message? Do you think she's trying to say something to you today?
Yeah, because like I said, it started, activity-wise on the second floor with some, equipment going off and stuff. And then we were asking, who is this? And we got Linda. And then we played, listened, after we went home, listened to everything. We'd come back. We'd ask for her again. Not only will she reply with the EVPs, but she'll hit, certain pieces of equipment to let you know, that it's her. She has, through a whole process, it's come about giving us bits and pieces of her story. She likes her story to be told and to be acknowledged. She has come across and saying, he hurt me, you can ask about the murder and everything, you'll get a reply. For people with that, with the whole place, for somebody to, to come out and experience it for themselves would be great.
When you have a situation like this where it seems that there's a message that's being given out in bits and pieces or repeated, what do you feel, and this is really a matter of opinion, what do you feel her goal is by sharing this information out there today, so many years after this happened, and with the person who victimized her and took her life, probably also long gone? What do you feel the goal she has with still trying to share the story?
Well, with her, I figure, she's, probably been lonely. And by getting that out, she's been acknowledged, and it's given her a chance to have a friend, have other friends, new people coming in. And then it's just, she may be trapped aboard, and then eventually this may give her the opportunity to go on, to go on further. Unless she already has, and then she just comes back in visitation. But I do know that she wants that to be known, what happened to her, that she's not forgotten.
As you go through the building on tours with guests and you share with them the stories and you have experiences together, can you tell me some of the more significant moments that you've had that stand out to you and the guests that you've had when investigating the building?
One of my best memories is we had some two young couples went with us, and they just wanted to go in for just like a little small ghost hunt. And one of the guys, it's two girls and two guys, but one of the guys, he thought he was going to be all macho and make fun, of it. And he's like, I got to see it to believe it. So we're all sitting there in the main area. There's a second floor balcony. And our rooms, up there. So we're sitting there, and we have one room off to the side that a lot of times you can see a figure blocking out the outside light. You can see him moving back and forth up in that room. Well, we're sitting there, and that guy, I noticed he kept looking up, and he's like, hey, somebody up there. Right? No, we're the only people in the building. He said, no, seriously, I'm sitting here watching it. And so he started getting a little freaked out with that. And then by the time we got to the tunnel system, we had a candle that we set on the threshold of the entrance of one of the tunnels coming out to the little section where the table's at. And he's sitting there watching it, and then finally he jumps up in his girlfriend's lap, and he's like, that candle moved. He said, it's still moving. Now, things like that, yeah, that's when you got people that are non-believers, then when they leave after seeing something that, like that, actual figure moving and then a candle moving towards them, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I think it's impressive, and this is part of, you know, why I really do this a lot, is that we had an open ghost hunt, and we had a group of people come in. We took them, you know, and was doing ghost hunt with them. And when the night was over, we were out in the parking lot talking. They're like, wow, you know, where can we get some of this equipment? I said, yeah. I said, well, next time I see you, you're going to have a bunch of equipment. Sure enough, we had another open ghost hunt. They showed up, had a bunch of equipment. And I was like, well, you've been inside, you know, the layout. You can go in and you have some fun. So they went and done their thing. And that night when we were done, I looked at Gerald and him and I said, next time I see you, I said, you're going to have your own paranormal group. Sure enough, a week or two later, he called us up, and he's like, what would be a good name for us to have for our group? So, you know, to see somebody progress through those stages is awesome to me. It makes me smile and happy, you know, that we done our job right. You know, we're giving people a good experience. They're having a good time, and they want to continue it. They want to grow.
Would you say this is a fairly reliable location to go in and gather evidence where more times than not, you'll walk away with information and pieces of experiences that cannot be explained?
Yeah, pretty much. Even when you don't think there's anything going on, and then they go back and look at their cameras, their recordings, and then you realize, wow, there were a whole bunch of things going on. I'm not going to brag on the place. But if all of our groups that have been coming lately have been getting, you know, leaving pleased, thinking, wow, this is a hotbed. And a lot of it has to do with, to me, it's like an antenna. The powerhouse sets out in the water, which is running water, sets on top of limestone, and all the mountains around it are full of quartz. So, you know, it's like a lighthouse for activity.
Would you go so far as to use the term portal with it? I know it's a term that can be thrown out there somewhat callously, but I'm just wondering, with a location like this, not only its physicality of where it is set up, but its history and all of that, and the comings and the goings and the extreme amount of activity that seemed to be going on there. Is that an accurate term possibly for this building as well?
Well, we've had couple reliable sources come through that said that there is a portal there, two of them. And also, you know, with it being on running water, you know, it could be a beacon. You know, it's a big building. Hey, you ain't, you know, you're in the spirit realm. This is your home, you know, come over. But yeah, we've been told that there's two portals there. And it's just, with everything that's went on with the surrounding area, not just the property, but the river, across the river, the whole area. So it's just almost like a stop-off point for somebody. You know, they're coming through. Even people that come visit, if they have an attachment, you know, the attachment could just stay there with us.
Obviously, the building has been around for quite some time, and has survived and seen quite a bit. What's your hopes for it in the future, 20, 30, 40 years from now? We're talking about a concrete limestone structure sitting in the middle of water. Where do you see it being? What do you hope for it in the years to come?
I just hope that, you know, if we leave, that somebody else takes it over. I hope they take it over with the same pretense that I said when we got it. I want to keep this place open. I want to keep it affordable for everybody to come and enjoy, whether they want to take a tour, a ghost hunt, or a paranormal team to come in and investigate. You know, I'd love for it to stay open for that. And when they do come in, that's what we ask of everybody. Please respect, show respect, because this is their home. You know, you're going into the spirit's home. That's where they are at, Please show them respect.
To find out more about the haunted Hales Bar Dam, you can visit their website at halesbardam.webs.com. The link is also on our website at thegravetalks.com. A thank you to Jeff for talking with us today about his experiences with the Hales Bar Dam. That wraps up today's episode of The Grave Talks. If you like our program, please subscribe. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you download podcasts. Please share the episode and the show with your friends as well. That lets other folks know that we exist and allows us to grow the program and make better and more episodes for you. TheGraveTalks.com is our website. Until the next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening.